Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
All six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Rock and roll. Welcome to the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced. And I'm glad to be here, and it is, what, 12:54 a.m., Monday, April 5th, technically Monday. It's just getting over Sunday. I actually had a pretty good weekend this weekend. I finished up show number 21. This is show number 22. Should point that out for the people just listening for the first time. This is show number 22. And I just finished up 21 on Saturday. Actually, I think I finished it Friday evening or very early Saturday and put it up on the server on Saturday. And the beauty of doing a pre-recorded show is the fact that I can do the show now and you all can listen at your leisure. And I do hope there are some people who are listening to this at work as best they can. There are several ways you can do this. If you have the kind of money for an MP3 player, you can download the show as an MP3 into your MP3 player and play it like that. Or you can, if you have enough time, I mean, these shows do run an hour or so long, and some of the shows are like, what, 12 to 14 megs after I get finished converting them. So they are pretty large, and actually it's nowhere near as large as the shows that I store for myself. I make two copies of the shows, one for my own personal use and the other that I put on the server because it's less space. But I do like a full stereo, the one that goes on the radio, which is like a mono. And it sounds pretty good, you know. It's remarkable that this show sounds as well as it does. And I am an egotist, and I take pride in the quality of my work and the work that's produced here in the on the Cup of Joe show. Excuse me. I'm not with Joey Jojo anymore. On the Cup of Joe show, I do take pride in the quality of the product as much as I can, considering that it costs so little to do, and I really don't spend a lot of money. Unlike some people, Bart Cop, you're getting ripped off, dude. $3,500 for a new Mac is too much. You don't need it. You can do everything you need to do. You got to get the more tech savvy. You know what I'm saying to you. Do you understand what I'm saying, huh? You got to go out. You got to get a little smart on the tech side. You spend way too much money. No need to spend the $3,500 on a new computer, huh? I do the whole thing for less than $350, much less than $350, less than a tenth of what you do. What do I got? The mixer here, it costs what? I think I paid like $38 for it on eBay. I paid like $30 for a mic. Granted, I paid a little more. I paid a little bit for a mic to get a nicer mic, but you really don't need to spend that much. I can get by with far less. I have a secondary mic that I bought over the internet, and I just actually, one of the things I accomplished over the weekend was to buy some new connectors to put the other mics on for when I get guests on. And there are some people that I want to have as guests. I also bought a little doohickey to record the telephone, so I can do phone interviews, and I'm hoping to do that sometime in the near future. We're trying to get some local people. I don't want to name names just yet, but some people in the Atlanta area and maybe some other people who don't mind calling me long distance, because we actually don't have long distance on my phone. And I don't have a call. I have a calling card that my brother gave me, but that's really mostly for family stuff. But anyway, maybe I'll use that for that. The interviews won't be more than a regular segment, which is about 15 to 20 minutes, as you've probably noticed. I am planning on making some improvements to the show. I have some things in the works that I don't want to talk about until we get everything set up. I am looking to form a working crew, a work crew for the show. And basically, we're looking for a producer slash publicist or two separate people doing either one, someone who would help co-hosts. I do want to be the main star. I'm an egotist. This is my show, okay? This is my fucking show. And I do have an ego about that. And it's not necessarily in a mean thing, but it's the type of thing where I have to be that way, because if I have a second person and I get to the point where that person is overshadowing what I'm trying to do, then that's really not what this show is all about. It will become something different. But I do want someone to talk to and to get back, kind of like, you know, Howard Stern has his producer. What's her name? Robin, the lady of color. She's very nice. I don't really care much for Stern's show because of what he talks about. And I'm like the anti-guy. You know, I'm the anti what Howard Stern is all about. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I don't treat women as property. I'm just a regular working guy, and that's my spiel, and that's what I do here. But what I'm working on making, you know, like I say, getting a crew, and we're putting some people together, and we're going to have maybe like a little research staff or something. And basically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to audition for Air America or for anybody else who would want to pick me up. Not a Clear Channel station. I don't give a rat's ass how much they want to pay me. I will not work for a Clear Channel station. I will not be supporting them. The only liberals they have on their shows are guys like Alan Colmes. Those are the only ones they care about. And Randy Rhodes, God bless her. I love her to death. She is the greatest, best left-wing talk show person on the air right now. Al Franken, I love you, but you're still new to it. And I'm wondering how much longevity you're going to have. And maybe you're just going to be in it until Bush goes. I don't know. I love Randy. Randy rocks. And she worked for a Clear Channel station. Now, I think she's exclusively with Air America. I'm not really sure about that. But she really rocks. What she did to Ralph Nader the other day. And let me talk about Ralph Nader for a second, because I really respect a lot of things that Ralph Nader had done in the past with, you know, the watching out for corporate standards and corporate malfeasance and all that stuff. What he's doing now is just pure and utter bullshit. There's no sense to it. He's not building up a party. He's just running for president. That's fucking ridiculous. That's Pat Paulson, and you got to be really old to know who Pat Paulson was, and I'm not even going to bother to explain. But it's basically, and it's just hurting the cause, man. I don't care what you say about how great you are. Nobody gives a shit about how great you are, Ralph. You know, just shut the fuck up, go home, and live off your money. You're rich. You got plenty of money. You don't have to worry about shit. Move to another damn country or something. Get out. Stop splitting the vote. Anyway. You know, I'm not like a lot of other radio talk show hosts. I don't have a lot of charisma, personal charisma. I'm not really the type of person that people flock to all the time. I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy with a mic who speaks out because no one else is speaking out. And, you know, when I talk about workers' issues here, I don't really talk about, as you've noticed, I don't talk about labor statistics and unemployment rates and this and that. No, I just talk about the bullshit that goes on the job and the bullshit that goes on to prevent you from getting a job if you don't have a job. And I hope there are people listening here at work. I hope there are people listening at work. Because that would be really, really cool. Because frankly, in most cases, not in all cases, I don't want to say in all cases, but in most cases, your bosses are ripping you off, especially if you work for a large corporation. And speaking of large corporations, let me talk about my favorite evil corporate entity, and that's Walmart. I openly encourage all of my listeners to boycott Walmart. I will not buy anything from Walmart. Yes, I agree that there are other stores that are almost as bad or very close, but Walmart is the absolute worst. They are the worst travesty. And I got this from the New York Times, and actually there's two different articles from the New York Times that I want to talk about in this segment. And this is going on in Inglewood, California. And this is by John Broder. Where basically the Walmart is doing an end run around the law by basically taking advantage of California's voter initiative. God, it's horrible. I'm a radio host and I can't remember the words. But they're using a voter initiative, and they paid signature gatherers to get enough signatures to get a voter initiative on the ballot that would basically create a 60-acre city, in a sense, that they can pretty much do what they want to. And we talked on the last show about there used to be company stores, and in one area, in one place, there was a company that basically created its own currency and its own little community. And Walmart's not going so far as to create its own currency. God knows they've got enough American currency. But they do want to create an area that's basically going to be almost a city unto itself. And they sponsored a voter initiative, and part of the voter initiative basically overrules normal regulations. I don't think you can do that. I mean, there's you know, they're talking about fighting that in court because Walmart's got a big advertising campaign. And you know, unfortunately, people in this country are our own worst enemies. A lot of people would probably be all for it because, oh, it's Walmart. They're cheap. I had one person at work, you know, I was telling them about, you know, don't shop at Walmart. And they're like, oh, I got to shop at Walmart, you know. And I said, but they you know, they have one of the worst labor records in the country and this and that. And they said, oh, those people have a choice, you know. I said, no, they don't have a choice. You know, and that's what I try to explain. In some cases, Walmart is the only place in the area that you can work at or you can go to. And they'll basically come in, drive all the small businesses out of business. And in some cases, they'll just pull out once there's no money to be left, no money had. You know, there's no money left in the town. So there's no profit to be made, so they just fucking leave. And the town is a ghost. I remember stories about that from 60 Minutes a few years back. And it's still going on, and it's just as bad, and they're getting worse. Let's see, what does it say here? While Walmart has turned to the ballot in a number of cities and towns to win the right to build its giant emporiums, the Inglewood Initiative is significantly different. The proposal would essentially exempt Walmart from all of Inglewood's planning, zoning, and environmental regulations, creating a city within a city subject only to its own rules. And Walmart has hired an advertising and public relations firms to market the initiative and is spending more than $1 million to support the measure, which is known as Initiative 4A. The company is blanketing the community, which is roughly half African-American and half Latino, with mailers and telephone calls, and is broadcasting advertisements on television stations with black and Latino audiences. Company officials say that Walmart adopted this aggressive new tactic only after it became clear that Inglewood officials, backed by its allies in organized labor, church groups, and community organizations, would never approve the complex. Walmart is strongly anti-union. Peter Canelos, the Southern California coordinator for Walmart's Communities Affairs Division, says that they were told, don't waste your time. But these groups are not representative of the community, he said. Organized labor is attempting to bully Walmart and its customers. If organized labor and these elected officials they put into power think they're going to attack Walmart, then they better expect Walmart to fight back. Project opponents say that Walmart's the one doing the bullying. They noted that the company paid signature gatherers for the ballot initiative more than it pays its average clerk. And they say that Inglewood will be a test case. If the initiative succeeds here, it will become a model for Walmart sovereignty across the nation and around the globe. You know, and this is the thing about these people. They're always going to do stuff like this. I mean, you pass laws and stuff like that, and fine. You know, and you can stop them for a while. I mean, we held them off for like 70 years or so after the New Deal. Basically, corporations were on the run. And while they were still profitable, they didn't make the huge amounts of money. And then, you know, as soon as corporate political action committees were legalized, or at least they were allowed to use their own funds, they started buying back the government. And now that they own the government, they can feel free to get away with whatever the hell they want with. Don't shop at Walmart. Don't ever go to a Walmart. Never set foot in one. Never go there. Drive them out of business. I don't have the power to you know, get millions and millions of people to stop going there. And there's a lot of people who are just too ignorant to go anywhere else. And unfortunately, there are some people who don't have a choice because Walmart has basically come in there and run every other business out of town. But don't go there. If you have any choice at all, don't go there. I made that decision, about a year and a half ago. I decided I was never going to Walmart again. I stepped into Walmart one time, and you know, I had gone shopping at Walmart in the past, and it's like, you know what? No more. No more. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm making it clear right now that I am never setting foot into a Walmart ever again. I'll have to be physically forced into one before I go. I will not step foot inside one. That is my promise to you. I will not give them my business. You shouldn't give them yours. If you know what's good for you, you won't give them yours. And I'll tell you why. And this goes to the other thing. And then, you know, Walmart pays its employees very low wages. They will lock them up and make them stay an extra hour after work without pay. That's basically stealing from you. That's stealing from you. There are situations where you can't go on break. There were stories about women cashiers who couldn't leave the register to go to the bathroom and they wound up peeing in their pants. This is your future, ladies and gentlemen. If you let Walmart get away with this shit, and they are getting away with it to a certain extent, but every time you let them get away with something like that, they take a lot more. They won't stop. They'll never stop. And that's what it eventually leads to. You know, you're working for nothing the rest of your life. And that leads me to the other article. And this is from Bob Herbert from the New York Times, one of the few decent columnists to have left, him and Paul Krugman. Although Mr. Herbert gets off on his little rants and raves, he had a very particularly good one today. The article's called "We're More Productive, Who Gets the Money?" And he says, American workers have been remarkably productive in recent years, but they are getting fewer and fewer of the benefits of this increased productivity. While the economy, as measured by the gross domestic product, has been strong for some time now, ordinary workers have gotten little more than the back of the hand from employers who have pocketed an unprecedented share of the cash from this burst of economic growth. You know, you remember that in the 90s, during all that growth, you know, and a lot of it was due to Bill Clinton's initiative, but mostly the profit was still, unfortunately, going to shareholders, and it was going to other people. It wasn't going to the working class. And as much as I admire Clinton, the fact is he didn't do as much as he could have for the regular working guy. But you know what? He was stymied by a Republican Congress and a Republican opposition that had a lot of powerful corporate allies and just a huge corporate political conglomerate, a complex like the military-industrial complex, and it's all part of the same deal. You know, it's all a group of rich white bastards who just spend all of their lives basically finding new and better ways of ripping you off. Wars are another way of ripping you off, like General Butler said, General Smedley Butler, way back in the 20s and 30s, and he had that great article, "War is a Racket," talking about how, you know, the U.S. military is basically used more to secure U.S. business interests than it was to defend the United States. And that's exactly what's going on in Iraq now. The working class soldiers are getting killed so that Halliburton can make a fortune on it. And so Dick Cheney and his buddies can make a fortune on it. I mean, that's all it is. And, you know, they always talk about, oh, American production is the best in the world. Well, all that means, ladies and gentlemen, is that you're working your ass off for more hours for less money. That's really all it means. You know, I was talking to my wife earlier tonight and talking about just the little things and the incident that I mentioned on my show about how when I came into work a little early and there was some stuff coming down the line and I had begun to start pulling stuff off because that's just the way I am, you know. That's just the way I am. And, you know, one of the other guys working there said, no, you shouldn't do that. And I said, why? I don't mind. I'm here. And he said, yeah, I know, and I realize it, and it's cool, but you shouldn't do that because if you do that, they'll start expecting you to do that. And I said, yeah, that's right. And the same kind of thing happened to my wife. She used to work for, what cafeteria was it? S&S Cafeteria? Yeah, back in Orlando. S&S Cafeteria, which was actually not a bad place to eat, but I wouldn't want to work there. And my wife, she was just working there part-time, 4 hours a day. She was in high school at the time. And my wife has had to work pretty much since high school. And she had children very young, but that's another story. And she had to support them. That's another story. But she was working in S&S Cafeteria. And she told me a couple of things. When she first started working there, she was helping out serving the food. And they had metal spoons to serve the food. Well, they were hot because they're in steaming trays, you know, to keep the food hot. And she's like, do we have some gloves or anything? And she was called into the office and told, you know, to stop complaining. And what the hell is that? And basically what they did was they switched her job because she couldn't grab these spoons. They were too hot. You know, they're steaming metal. Metal that's been heated to very high temperatures. And you don't expect people to just handle that. You know, get some fucking gloves. Jesus Christ, what's the problem with that? But no, she's labeled a troublemaker. So what they did was they switched her job, and she spent most of her time basically rolling silverware, which if you've ever gone to a cafeteria like that, they have the trays and they have the silverware already rolled up into napkins. And that's basically what she did for 3 or 4 hours every day. And she did X amount. And then what she noticed is that when she was finished and she had a little free time, she was going over and helping out the dishwasher guy. And they had one of those automatic dishwashing machines, which is like a conveyor belt, and you push it in on one end and it goes through, you know. And she was helping out a little bit there, and then that became part of her job, regular, along with a couple other things when she was helping out. And she wound up doing more and more work, and you know what? They weren't paying her any more money, and they were expecting her to do it all in that same four-hour time slot. You give them an inch, and they take a mile. And I'm calling all of you out there who are working in any capacity, whether you're working for a big high-tech firm or whether you're working for, like a manufacturing plant like me, I call upon you. Don't do anything you absolutely don't have to do. You know, and it's getting to the point where I'm going to, you know, you're going to have to start saying, you're going to have to start refusing to do shit. Labor comes before capital. Remember that. I said that last show. They can't make a fucking penny without you. And if we all stick together, if we all say enough is fucking enough, we will get what we want because they don't have any choice. If they want to make their money, they have to give in because they can't do shit without us. I don't care how much automation you have. There are certain things that simply can't be done by machines, or there's things that can't be done by wholly by computers. And there's a lot of us out there, and we just want to work, and we want to work honestly, and we want to put in, you know, our time, and we want to support ourselves and our families. And you know what? We can't do it on the jobs we have. But as Bob Herbert said, we're like walking on a treadmill, and we keep walking and walking, and they keep turning the treadmill faster and faster, and we're never getting anywhere. We're staying where we are. In fact, we're sliding backwards. And a lot of my anger is devoted towards other workers, especially down here, who fight against themselves. Anybody who says anything is just a lazy whiner. Well, you know what? You're going to get dragged down, too. The ones that are sitting there bitching at other people are whining, you're getting dragged down, too. Because I'll tell you something, the big corporations and the bosses, they don't give a shit about you. You could fucking die the next day and they'll just get somebody to replace you. They don't care. That dollar sign is the only thing they care about. I'm not saying that money isn't important. I'm not saying that we should get rid of the whole money system altogether, although if a way can be devised so that people can support themselves without having to enslave themselves to somebody else, I'd be all for it. So far, I haven't heard any good ideas. Certainly communism wasn't a good idea. But they're just basically ripping you off. And you need money. You need money, but you shouldn't have to put up with all this shit to go get it. It should, and money shouldn't be raised to such a level of importance that it's the absolute only thing. Because that's the only thing these fucking people care about. More, more, more. I'm a student of history. As some of you have read my blog from the beginning of the Cup of Joe blog, know that I talk about how, in my eyes, I see a lot of similarities to ancient Athens in what's going on here. Now, the Athenians were the first free society, and their society lasted about 200 years until a group of rich bastards who had gotten rich basically ripping other people off decided they wanted to have their own little empire. And their big defeat was in Sicily. They lost the bulk of their fleet, and they were eventually taken over by Sparta. And it didn't start out that way. They started out with the noblest of intentions. But as time went by and people got fat and lazy and wealthy, they decided enough is enough. I highly recommend, and it's very dry reading, but I highly recommend people read Thucydides. And he's my hero because he was the objective reporter who wrote about what happened in those days. And he was very even-handed. And he basically showed how greed destroyed a country. And that's what's happening in this country. I don't think we have a Thucydides now because I don't think there's any really truly objective reporting anymore. You're not going to get it from the corporate-run media like CNN, and certainly not Fox, which is nothing but propaganda. It's fucking Pravda for Republicans. And, you know, as far as that sort of thing is concerned, the Republicans act just like the communists. I mean, they're from the different political point of view, but they use the same tactics as communists. Anybody who goes against them is insane. They're insane. The Russians used to actually literally lock people up in insane asylums. You know, if you oppose the Soviet system, you must be insane. And they're doing the same things. And you know what? The sad thing is that we're doing it to ourselves, especially down here in the South, where people have this anti-government attitude, and they just don't fucking realize. They just don't fucking realize that they're cutting their own throats. Anyway, let's have some music, and we'll come back with another segment of the Cup of Joe radio show.
Sonny gets married and moves away. Sonny has a baby. I've been waking up at sunrise. I've been following the light across my room. I watch the night receive the moon of my day. Some people say the sky is just the sky, but I say, why deny the obvious, child? Why deny the obvious, child? Sonny sits by his window and thinks to himself, how strange that some rooms are like cages. Sonny's yearbook from high school is down from the shelf, and he idly comes through the pages. Some have died, some have fled from themselves, or struggled from here to get there. Sonny wanders beyond his interior walls, runs his hands to his spinning brown hair. Well, I'm accustomed to a smoother ride, or maybe I'm a dog who's lost his pride. I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep the night. Some people say a lie is just a lie, but I say the cross is in the ballpark. Why deny the obvious, child?
as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
R.E.M. Band from Athens, not far from here in Georgia. End of the world as we know it. Certainly feels that way, and has for the last couple of years anyway. Before that, we had Paul Simon, The Obvious Child. That's from the mid-80s, my period of music. Late 70s, mid-80s, that's the period of music that I'm most familiar with. And I do like some new stuff, and I play some new stuff occasionally, but unfortunately, most you're going to get from me is the older stuff, unless somebody recommends something. And I do want people to recommend music, J-O-E-V-E-C at bellsouth.net. Tell me the song you want to hear. Please don't be insulted if I don't play it. The only real qualification is that I have to like the song. We began that with something from the 70s, the theme from the TV show SWAT, which most of you young whippersnappers don't have ever even heard of. SWAT was a strategic weapons assault team, and it was a cop show, basically. It's a great, great theme. I love that theme. And welcome back to the Cup of Joe radio show. This is episode number 22. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of those of you who have been unvoiced, devoiced, had your voice taken away, whichever term you wish to use, by the Bush administration and the corporate people behind them. How are you all doing? And as I sit right now, it is 12:08 a.m., technically on Thursday, Wednesday evening and Thursday. And actually, let me explain this. Where I work, once I passed my 90-day probationary period and became an official Siemens employee, I became eligible for what they call floating holidays. And that's where basically you can choose 2 days that are like your personal holidays, apart from the regular holidays you usually get. And since I'm planning on going down to Florida to be with some friends and family, in late May, I was going to take my floating holidays on those days when I was flying out. Well, I submitted my form to it, and my supervisor came to me last night and said, you can't take those days that day. You basically have to do them before May the 6th. It was kind of a use them or lose them before that date type of deal. And I said, well, since we had this Friday off, which is Good Friday, and apparently at Siemens that's like a holiday, I guess that was one of the ones that was chosen by the union to be like an official holiday, even though it's more of a religious holiday than anything else, that's one of the days we got off. So we had this Friday off, so I said, well, how much notice do I have to give you about taking days off? And he said, well, you know, the next day is fine. And I said, well, can I take Wednesday and Thursday off? And he said, yeah, sure. So I filled out a new form and gave it to him. And so basically I had today off, and I've got tomorrow off, and I got Friday off, and then there's the weekend. So I got 5 days off, 3 of those with pay, which is always good. If you work for a living, 3 days off with pay is always a wonderful thing. That way you can have your days off guilt-free. And I just basically used the day today to take my wife for a date, and I met with some people, and I'm not going to give any more details about that, but it has to do with the show. Not yet, not until we're ready, not until I'm ready, and all that. And I just spent the last 45 minutes or so. When I got sent this computer by my friend Eric Wampner down in Orlando, one of the guys I'm going to go see down there, when I got sent this computer, he had a hard drive with it. And I have been trying desperately to get this other hard drive activated in my machine. I'm still using my hard drive from my previous computer as my main drive because it's got all my programs on it and it's got all my text files on it and stuff like that. When the time comes and I eventually get a new system, I'm just basically going to incorporate the programs that I'm used to using into the new system, whatever that might be. The thing about that is, Until then, I would like to get this hard drive because this is a 40 gig hard drive. I have a 40 gig hard drive in here, and the other one's also a 40 gig hard drive. I'd like to merge the two partitions in this hard drive into the C drive and use the other one as the D drive, so I have a lot more memory to put hard drive space to put in music and videos and stuff like that. And I have a lot of music. A bunch of it is on CD-ROMs because, quite frankly, it had filled up my entire, the 20 or so gigs that I had used for the thing. So I'd like to get that taken care of. And I'm thinking about getting an external drive, but, you know, this thing's cost a bunch of money, and I'm really wary about spending that kind of money right now. I really should be. I put a whole bunch of money in the savings so that I can save for a car when the moment came for it. So I don't know. If you go on the blog, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com. On the very top, you have a thing that says, "What is a cup of Joe worth to you?" Any of you who wish to donate or help me out, get my increased computer. It's really going to cost about $300. I saw a motherboard, a memory, a processor chip, and some more memory. And that's going to cost roughly $300. And that's actually a fairly decent price. I've only got the tower, I've only got the hard drives, and that'll just help me get set up so I can do a little bit of a better show. And I really, it's not like life or death I need it, but I really do need to improve the system that I have here. So where was I? What's going on? I had the day off, I actually had time to write a long blurb on the blog, and it was basically about something that happened last night, and it combined with one of the emails I got from one of the Dean campaign groups having to do with George W.'s second term, if he should get a second term. And I'm a pessimist, and I believe he will get in again because I just frankly think Americans are easily scared and easily manipulated into voting for people who work against their own best interests. I mean, certainly nothing the Bush administration has done anything to help anybody except those at the very, very top levels of our society. And everyone else is getting screwed. And when I called my wife last night, now I have breaks where I work, 6:15 for 10 minutes, then I have a half an hour for lunch at 8:15, and then I have a final break at 11 o'clock for 10 minutes. But I always thought that 11 o'clock break was kind of silly because it's like I get off at 12, so you take a break, and there's less than an hour before you got to go home. But that's the policy. I usually call my wife during this time just to say hi and sometimes to make sure she's awake because she takes a lot of medicine, and the medicine makes her sleepy sometimes. And just make sure she's awake so that dinner is hopefully ready when I get home. I eat very late since I come home at midnight or so. And I called her, and she was crying because she had been watching the news and reading on the websites about the big fighting that's been going on in Iraq, and that's continuing as I speak, as far as I know. And, you know, what makes her more angry and frustrated and scared and makes her cry is the fact that she really feels powerless to do anything about it. You know, my wife used to be a Republican, or at least she thought George W. Bush was great and all that, until she had her eyes opened by some of the things that I was showing her. News sources that were different from what she was getting. And she still gets these little emails from her family, and most of her family is very pro-Bush or pro-war on terror and, you know, think we're doing everything hunky-dory. And everything is not hunky-dory. If you're listening only to American news, you're getting such a warped point of view that you're never really going to understand what's going on. You have to read other sources. The BBC, I found, is an excellent source. Some of the political sites are an excellent source. Atrios and Daily Coast do a very, very good job of vetting their information so that it gets out properly. Pardon me there, taking a drink. But anyway, she was extremely upset about the news and the fact that she couldn't really do anything about it. And I share her frustration, as I'm sure most of you do out there who are listening to my show. Those of you who are listening who are in agreement and not a freeper who's listening in just to see what they can make fun at. And certainly not my friend Beachon, who I'm sure is thinking everything is just a big fat joke, knowing him the way he does. He doesn't take a lot of this stuff extremely seriously, unfortunately. And that's one of the real problems with this country right now. But things are pretty bad in Iraq. We lost 12 soldiers yesterday. We probably lost some more today. And
one of the mailings I got from the former Dean groups is an article by Robert Reich, which I think was in the New Republic. The American Prospect, excuse me. So Mr. Reich was the Secretary of the Treasury under President Clinton, one of the most intelligent men you'll ever meet, one of the architects of the good economic policies, and really nothing they did was really that complicated, but they were very good responders to economic crisis, and they did a very good job in understanding just what was needed to boost the economy up. And even though the Clinton economy wasn't perfect, it was so much better than what we have now, as I'm sure anyone who is out there looking for work will agree with. But if they do get in for another term, here's what we can look forward to, according to Robert Reich. And he writes, a friend who specializes in foreign policy and hobnobs with sub-cabinet officials in the Defense and State Departments told Mr. Reich that the only thing that stopped the Bush people from storming into Iran and North Korea is the upcoming election in 2004. If Bush gets another term, Cheney and Rumsfeld are out of the box. They'll take the second term as a mandate to wage the war on terror everywhere and anywhere. But domestic policy will also swing further right. A second term would strengthen the White House's stand on issues that even many congressional Republicans have a hard time accepting, such as the assault on civil liberties. They will seek to push the Patriot II Act through Congress, giving the Justice Department and the FBI powers to inspect mail, eavesdrop on phone conversations and email, and examine personal medical records, insurance claims, and bank accounts. Right-wing evangelicals will solidify their control over the Departments of Justice, Education, and Health and Human Services, curtailing abortions, putting federal funds into the hands of private religious groups, pushing prayer into public schools, and promoting creationism. These are all not good things. And these are things we can all look forward to if Mr. Bush gets a second term. And I want to reiterate that I am not Mr. Kerry's biggest fan. I think he's one of those guys that's hung around Washington a little too long, and I used to think that when the conservatives talked about the whole Washington insider group that, you know, they were just a bunch of nut jobs. But I understand to a certain extent what they're talking about. Of course, mainly they were bitching that they've been out of the loop for very long. And with the black box voting, you really don't know whether or not you're getting an accurate count. I mean, my feeling is if you're going to elect an idiot, at least we should know we're electing an idiot. And obviously the Florida count was very controversial. I mean, never mind the whole recount thing. Let's deal with the fact that about 5,000 to 10,000 people were simply denied their right to vote legally. Mostly, of course, blacks and Hispanics who were nominally Democratic supporters. And, you know, the margin for the Florida victory was very, very small indeed. And of course, as everyone knows, Mr. Gore got the most votes overall. And I'm not arguing that that should be the new standard, because I'm actually a big believer in the Electoral College. But it should be an accurate election. And the only people who don't want it to be an accurate election are the people who want to manipulate it to their favor. I mean, realistically, the Republicans, certainly the hardcore Republicans, the Freepers are a big minority in this country. You're talking about maybe 20% of the people at most. When you consider that only half of the people in this country voted to begin with, and less than half of those voted for Mr. Bush, overall, realistically, you're looking at about 25% of the country that are hardcore Bush supporters. And as Dr. Dean pointed out, it's that other 150 or so million people that we need to get involved. Actually, since we have roughly 300 million people in this country, about roughly 100 million voted in the last election, and that leaves 200 million out there. So if we can just get a small percentage of those people to wake up and start paying attention, then a lot of things can change. But what do you do in the meantime? And that was my question. What do you do in the meantime? I do this radio show and I do this blog, and I realize I'm just a very, very small fish in an extremely big ocean, but I'm doing everything I can. And when I look at the fanatics on the right, I just don't see how they're going to give up power easily. The other post on my blog was simply entitled Blood, and I'm going to address that here. And it was very simple. I said, let's not kid ourselves. Sooner or later, it'll have to come down to blood. It always does. And my point is that, especially when you're talking about workers' rights or even civil rights, everything that's every bit of progress that we have made over the years has come in at a blood price. There's have to been fighting. People aren't just going to go there and do legislations and be reasonable. You know, certainly the people in charge are not interested in being reasonable. They want what they want. They will stop at nothing to get it. They have no qualms about killing people who are in their way. And we have to be prepared for that. I don't want violence. I don't see it as the way things should be. But I see it as the fact that I see it as the way things are going to have to be eventually. Because they're just not going to give up. These people are fanatics. And with all the insanity that's going on in Iraq, you would think that they would even take a second look at it. They're really not interested because, you know, they don't really care. They don't care about you or me. You know, the Bush people, the Cheneys, the Rumsfelds, they don't care about, you know, people like you and me. Bush's father calls us, people like us, OFUs, one fodder unit. You know, we the only purpose that we have is to help these people make a lot of money. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who want to go along with them because they want to be one of the quote-unquote in crowd and because they figure that maybe they have a chance to get that sort of enormous wealth themselves. And I'll tell you right now, that kind of money, the kind of money they're talking about, that's a trap. That's just a lie. I mean, once you get to a certain point, you don't need any more. And George Lucas talked about being rich. He said, once you have a nice house and a nice car, all having more money means is that you get to eat out more. And what these people are greedy for is not so much money, but power. And again, they don't really care who they have to step over to get it. And, you know, getting political power, however legitimately or illegitimately, is fine within a certain stricture. But you have to know what to do with power when you get it. Certainly the FDRs and the Teddy Roosevelts and all the other progressive leaders, they had no qualms about bending the rules or doing things that needed to be done to get power. But once they had power, they didn't use it for the sole purpose of getting more power, which is what the Bush people do. It's a very bad situation. And my heart right now goes out to our soldiers, our brave soldiers who are out there. I don't know. I doubt any of them will ever get a chance to listen to this. They don't have. I don't know if they get much of a chance to for an internet connection. I know that thanks to Ben Birch and the White Rose Society, that I'm getting a lot more listeners now than I used to. But I think I should let them know if they have a way of hearing and listening to me, that I'm with them. I'm a veteran myself. I mean, I was never in combat, but I understand what it's like to be in the service. And I understand that, you know, most of you joined the service for the same reason I did, because you wanted to take advantage of the opportunities that the military has to offer. A lot of you are out there just trying to pay off your college loans. A lot of you are reservists who really shouldn't be out there as long as you have been. And I know that the people in charge of you have been lying to you about when you're supposed to go home and when you're not supposed to go home. I'm just very sad that they're the ones who are winding up paying the price for the Bush administration and their policies. And it's going to take more than just regime change at the top. It's going to take more than just getting Mr. Bush out of office and his people. We have to change how Americans think. We have to change. We have to sit here and decide what kind of country we want. Do we want to be, to want to try to go back to being what we were, which was the greatest nation of all the free nations in the world, or do we just want to go about our business being an empire and wind up eventually in the dustbin just like all the other empires? You cannot win these type of wars militarily. You cannot put a gun to these people's heads and force them to be like you are. And they're not barbarians. These people are no more barbarous. The people who strung up those mercenaries and burned them and hung them from the bridge are no more barbaric than the good white Christians in the 20s and the 30s who strung up black people by the neck and made a whole big party out of it and even made postcards to send to people. Here we are at the lynching. We're just as bad as they are when it comes right down to it. When it comes right down to the nuts and bolts of it, we are just as bad as they are. We are capable of just as much barbarity. The Bichon, who sits there screaming bloody murder every time one of their people shoots at ours, when I talk to him about my Pax Liberalis, my idea for a free peace, which is just really a slow but sure and peaceful transition to a global economy and a global authority, his attitude is, well, I'll be the one shooting at your helicopters. Excuse me. So, you know, the people of Iraq, and as much as I hate to see them shooting at our soldiers, the people of Iraq aren't doing anything more than what we would do under the same circumstances. And I feel sorry for them as much as I feel sorry for the poor soldiers, our brave soldiers who are out there, you know, fighting and too often dying for no real reason. Anyway, this is going to be the last segment. Usually I do three segments, but I'm only going to do two segments this show. I had a third segment planned with something special, but that kind of sort of fell through. But I'm just going to go ahead and finish up this show this week. And next week's show, we hope to have some special surprises and a little bit more added on to it. And here's a little something for the soldiers. And we'll be back in a couple of days with the Cup of Joe radio show.
Soft soap, they said.